The king refusing to grant it, Robert became jealous and discontented, and happening one day, while in this temper, to be ridiculed by his brothers, who threw water on him from a balcony as he was walking before the door, he drew his sword, rushed upstairs, and was only prevented by the king himself from putting them to death. That same night, he hotly departed with some followers from his father at Eames Court, and endeavoured to take the castle of Rouen by surprise. Failing in this, he shut himself up in another castle in Normandy, which the king besieged, and where Robert one day unhorsed and nearly killed him without knowing who he was. His submission when he discovered his father, and the intercession of the queen and others, reconciled them, but not soundly, for Robert soon strayed abroad, and went from court to court with his complaints. He was a gay, careless, thoughtless fellow, spending all he got on musicians and dancers, but his mother loved him, and often, against the king of Tiamat's command, supplied him with money through a messenger named Samson. At length the incensed king swore he would tear out Samson at Tiamat's eyes, and Samson, thinking that his only hope of safety was in becoming a monk, became one, went on such errands no more, and kept his eyes in his head. All this time, from the turbulent day of his strange coronation, the conqueror had been struggling, you see, at any cost of cruelty and bloodshed, to maintain what he had seized. All his reign, he struggled still, with the same object ever before him. He was a stern, bold man, and he succeeded in it. He loved money, and was particular in his eating, but he had only leisure to indulge one other passion, and that was his love of hunting. He carried it to such a height that he ordered whole villages and towns to be swept away to make forests for the deer. Not satisfied with 68 royal forests, he laid waste an immense district, to form another in Hampshire, called the New Forest. The many thousands of miserable peasants who saw their little houses pulled down, and themselves and children turned into the open country without a shelter, detested him for his merciless addition to their many sufferings. And when, in the 21st year of his reign, which proved to be the last, he went over to Rouen, England was as full of hatred against him, as if every leaf on every tree in all his royal forests had been a curse upon his head. In the New Forest, his son Richard, for he had four sons, had been gored to death by a stag, and the people said that this so cruelly made forest would yet be fatal to others of the conqueror at Tiamat's race. He was engaged in a dispute with the King of France about some territory. While he stayed at Rouen, negotiating with that king, he kept his bed and took medicines, being advised by his physicians to do so, on account of having grown to an unwieldy size. Word being brought to him that the King of France made light of this, and joked about it, he swore in a great rage that he should rue his jests. He assembled his army, marched into the disputed territory, burnt to his old way, at the vines, the crops, and fruit, and set the town of Mantes on fire. But, in an evil hour, for, as he rode over the hot ruins, his horse, setting his hoofs upon some burning embers, started, threw him forward against the pommel of the saddle, and gave him a mortal hurt. For 6 weeks he lay dying in a monastery near Rouen, and then made his will, giving England to William, Normandy to Robert, and £5,000 to Henry. And now, his violent deeds lay heavy on his mind. He ordered money to be given to many English churches and monasteries, and a which was much better repentance he released his prisoners of state, some of whom had been confined in his dungeons 20 years. It was a September morning, and the sun was rising, when the king was awakened from slumber by the sound of a church bell. What bell is that? "Atm," he faintly asked. They told him it was the bell of the chapel of St. Mary. "I commend my soul, Atm," said he, "to Mary." Atm and died. Think of his name, the conqueror, and then consider how he lay in death. The moment he was dead, his physicians, priests, and nobles, not knowing what contest for the throne might now take place, or what might happen in it, hastened away, each man for himself and his own property. The mercenary servants of the court began to rob and plunder. The body of the king, in the indecent strife, was rolled from the bed, and lay alone, for hours, upon the ground. O conqueror, of whom so many great names are proud now, of whom so many great names thought nothing then, it were better to have conquered one true heart, than England. By and by, the priests came creeping in with prayers and candles, and a good knight, named Herluin, undertook, which no one else would do, to convey the body to Caen, in Normandy, in order that it might be buried in St. Stephen at TMS Church there, which the conqueror had founded. But fire, of which he had made such bad use in his life, seemed to follow him of itself in death. A great conflagration broke out in the town when the body was placed in the church, and those present running out to extinguish the flames, it was once again left alone. It was not even buried in peace. It was about to be let down, in its royal robes, into a tomb near the high altar, in presence of a great concourse of people, when a loud voice in the crowd cried out, "Ah, this ground is mine." Upon it, stood my father at TMS House. This king despoiled me of both ground and house to build this church. In the great name of God, I here forbid his body to be covered with the earth that is my right. ATM The priests and bishops present, knowing the speaker at TMS right, and knowing that the king had often denied him justice, paid him down 60 shillings for the grave. Even then, the corpse was not at rest. Tomb was too small, and they tried to force it in. It broke, a dreadful smell arose, the people hurried out into the air, and, for the third time, it was left alone. Where were the conqueror at TMS three sons, that they were not at their father at TMS burial? Robert was lounging among minstrels, dancers, and gamesters, in France or Germany. Henry was carrying his £5,000 safely away in a convenient chest he had got made. William the Red was hurrying to England, to lay hands upon the royal treasure and the crown. Chapter I saw England under William the Second, called Rufus. William the Red, in breathless haste, secured the three great forts of Dover, Pevensey, and Hastings, and made with hot speed for Winchester, where the royal treasure was kept. The treasurer delivering him the keys, he found that it amounted to £60,000 in silver, besides gold and jewels. Possessed of this wealth, he soon persuaded the Archbishop of Canterbury to crown him, and became William the Second, King of England. Rufus was no sooner on the throne, than he ordered into prison again the unhappy state captives whom his father had set free, and directed a goldsmith to ornament his father at TMS tomb profusely with gold and silver. It would have been more dutiful in him to have attended the sick conqueror when he was dying, but England itself, like this Red King, who once governed it, has sometimes made expensive tombs for dead men whom it treated shabbily when they were alive. The King of TMS brother, Robert of Normandy, seeming quite content to be only Duke of that country, and the King of TMS other brother, fine scholar, being quiet enough with his £5,000 in a chest, the King flattered himself, we may suppose, with the hope of an easy reign. But easy reigns were difficult to have in those days. The turbulent Bishop Odo, who had blessed the Norman army at the Battle of Hastings, and who, I dare say, took all the credit of the victory to himself, soon began, in concert with some powerful Norman nobles, to trouble the Red King. The truth seems to be that this bishop and his friends, who had lands in England and lands in Normandy, wished to hold both under one sovereign, and greatly preferred a thoughtless good-natured person, such as Robert was, to Rufus, who, though far from being an amiable man in any respect, was keen, and not to be imposed upon. They declared in Roberta TMS favour, and retired to their castles. Those castles were very troublesome to kings, in a sullen humour. The Red King, seeing the Normans thus falling from him, revenged himself upon them by appealing to the English, to whom he made a variety of promises, which he never meant to perform in particular, promises to soften the cruelty of the forest laws, and who, in return, so aided him with their valour, that Odo was besieged in the castle of Rochester, and forced to abandon it, and to depart from England for ever, whereupon the other rebellious Norman nobles were soon reduced and scattered. Then, the Red King went over to Normandy, where the people suffered greatly under the loose rule of Duke Robert. The King of TMS object was to seize upon the Duchy of TMS dominions. This, the Duke, of course, prepared to resist, and miserable war between the two brothers seemed inevitable, when the powerful nobles on both sides, who had seen so much of war, interfered to prevent it. A treaty was made. Each of the two brothers agreed to give up something of his claims, and that the longer liver of the two should inherit all the dominions of the other. When they had come to this loving understanding, they embraced and joined their forces against Fine Scholar, who had bought some territory of Robert with a part of his £5,000, and was considered a dangerous individual in consequence. St. Michael at TMS Mount, in Normandy. There is another St. Michael at TMS Mount, in Cornwall, wonderfully like it, was then, as it is now, a strong place perched upon the top of a high rock, around which, when the tide is in, the sea flows, leaving no road to the mainland. In this place, Fine Scholar shut himself up with his soldiers, and here he was closely besieged by his two brothers. At one time, when he was reduced to great distress for want of water, the generous Robert not only permitted his men to get water, but sent Fine Scholar wine from his own table, and, on being remonstrated with by the Red King, said, "Eh, what? Shall we let our own brother die of thirst? Where shall we get another, when he is gone?" At another time, the Red King riding alone on the shore of the bay, looking up at the castle, was taken by two of Fine Scholar at TMS men, one of whom was about to kill him, when he cried out, "Eh, hold, knave, I am the King of England." The story says that the soldier raised him from the ground respectfully and humbly, and that the king took him into his service. The story may or may not be true, but at any rate it is true that Fine Scholar could not hold out against his united brothers, and that he abandoned Mount St. Michael, and wandered about to as poor and forlorn as other scholars have been sometimes known to be. The Scotch became unquiet in the Red King at TMS time, and were twice defeated at the second time, with the loss of their king, Malcolm, and his son. The Welsh became unquiet too. Against them, Rufus was less successful, for they fought among their native mountains, and did great execution on the King of TMS troops. Robert of Normandy became unquiet too, and, complaining that his brother the king did not faithfully perform his part of their agreement, took up arms, and obtained assistance from the King of France, whom Rufus, in the end, bought off with vast sums of money. England became unquiet too. Lord Mowbray, the powerful Earl of Northumberland, headed a great conspiracy to depose the king, and to place upon the throne Stephen, the Conqueror, a TMS near relative. The plot was discovered, all the chief conspirators were seized, some were fined, some were put in prison, some were put to death. The Earl of Northumberland himself was shut up in a dungeon beneath Windsor Castle, where he died, an old man, 30 long years afterwards. The priests in England were more unquiet than any other class or power, for the Red King treated them with such small ceremony that he refused to appoint new bishops or archbishops when the old ones died, but kept all the wealth belonging to those offices in his own hands. In return for this, the priests wrote his life when he was dead, and abused him well. I am inclined to think, myself, that there was little to choose between the priests and the Red King, that both sides were greedy and designing, and that they were fairly matched. The Red King was false of heart, selfish, covetous, and mean. He had a worthy minister in his favorite, Ralph, nickname Ada, for almost every famous person had a nickname in those rough days of Flambard, or the Firebrand. Once, the king being ill, became penitent, and made Anselm, a foreign priest and a good man, Archbishop of Canterbury. But he no sooner got well again than he repented of his repentance, and persisted in wrongfully keeping to himself some of the wealth belonging to the archbishopric. This led to violent disputes, which were aggravated by the being in Rome at that time two rival popes, each of whom declared he was the only real original infallible pope, who couldn't make a mistake. At last, Anselm, knowing the Red King Otm's character, and not feeling himself safe in England, asked leave to return abroad. The Red King gladly gave it, for he knew that as soon as Anselm was gone, he could begin to store up all the Canterbury money again, for his own use. By such means, and by taxing and oppressing the English people in every possible way, the Red King became very rich. When he wanted money for any purpose, he raised it by some means or other, and cared nothing for the injustice he did, or the misery he caused. Having the opportunity of buying from Robert the whole Duchy of Normandy for 5 years, he taxed the English people more than ever, and made the very convents sell their plate and valuables to supply him with the means to make the purchase. But he was as quick and eager in putting down revolt as he was in raising money, for, a part of the Norman people objecting very naturally, I think, to being sold in this way, he headed an army against them with all the speed and energy of his father. He was so impatient, that he embarked for Normandy in a great gale of wind. And when the sailors told him it was dangerous to go to sea in such angry weather, he replied, "A hoist sail and away." Did you ever hear of a king who was drowned? ATM. You will wonder how it was that even the careless Robert came to sell his dominions. It happened thus. It had long been the custom for many English people to make journeys to Jerusalem, which were called pilgrimages, in order that they might pray beside the tomb of our Savior there. Jerusalem belonging to the Turks, and the Turks hating Christianity, these Christian travelers were often insulted and ill-used. The pilgrims bore it patiently for some time, but at length a remarkable man, of great earnestness and eloquence, called Peter the Hermit, began to preach in various places against the Turks, and to declare that it was the duty of good Christians to drive away those unbelievers from the tomb of our Savior, and to take possession of it, and protect it. An excitement such as the world had never known before was created. Thousands and thousands of men of all ranks and conditions departed for Jerusalem to make war against the Turks. The war is called in history the First Crusade, and every crusader wore a cross marked on his right shoulder. All the crusaders were not zealous Christians. Among them were vast numbers of the restless, idle, profligate, and adventurous spirit of the time. Some became crusaders for the love of change, some, in the hope of plunder, some, because they had nothing to do at home, some, because they did what the priests told them, some, because they liked to see foreign countries, some, because they were fond of knocking men about, and would as soon knock a Turk about as a Christian. Robert of Normandy may have been influenced by all these motives, and by a kind desire, besides, to save the Christian pilgrims from bad treatment in future. He wanted to raise a number of armed men, and to go to the crusade. He could not do so without money. He had no money, and he sold his dominions to his brother, the Red King, for 5 years. With the large sum he thus obtained, he fitted out his crusaders gallantly, and went away to Jerusalem in martial state. The Red King, who made money out of everything, stayed at home, busily squeezing more money out of Normans and English. After 3 years of great hardship and suffering from shipwreck at sea, from travel in strange lands, from hunger, thirst, and fever, upon the burning sands of the desert, and from the fury of the Turks, the valiant crusaders got possession of our Savior at Otm's tomb. The Turks were still resisting and fighting bravely, but this success increased the general desire in Europe to join the crusade. Another great French duke was proposing to sell his dominions for a term to the rich Red King, when the Red King Otm's reign came to a sudden and violent end. You have not forgotten the New Forest which the Conqueror made, and which the miserable people whose homes he had laid waste, so hated. The cruelty of the forest laws, and the torture and death they brought upon the peasantry, increased this hatred. The poor persecuted country people believed that the New Forest was enchanted. They said that in thunderstorms, and on dark nights, demons appeared, moving beneath the branches of the gloomy trees. They said that a terrible spectre had foretold to Norman hunters that the Red King should be punished there. And now, in the pleasant season of May, when the Red King had reigned almost 13 years, and a second prince of the Conqueror at TMS Bludder, another Richard, the son of Duke Roberto, was killed by an arrow in this dreaded forest. The people said that the second time was not the last, and that there was another death to come. It was a lonely forest, accursed in the people TMS hearts for the wicked deeds that had been done to make it, and no man save the king and his courtiers and huntsmen liked to stray there. But, in reality, it was like any other forest. In the spring, the green leaves broke out of the buds, in the summer, flourished heartily, and made deep shades, in the winter, shriveled and blew down, and lay in brown heaps on the moss. Some trees were stately, and grew high and strong, some had fallen of themselves, some were felled by the forester at TMS acts, some were hollow, and the rabbits burrowed at their roots, some few were struck by lightning, and stood white and bare. There were hillsides covered with rich fern, on which the morning dew so beautifully sparkled, there were brooks, where the deer went down to drink, or over which the whole herd bounded, flying from the arrows of the huntsmen, there were sunny glades, and solemn places where but little light came through the rustling leaves. The songs of the birds in the new forest were pleasanter to hear than the shouts of fighting men outside, and even when the Red King and his court came hunting through its solitudes, cursing loud and riding hard, with a jingling of stirrups and bridles and knives and daggers, they did much less harm than among the English or Normans, and the stags died, as they lived, far easier than the people. Upon a day in August, the Red King, now reconciled to his brother, Fine Scholar, came with a great train to hunt in the new forest. Fine Scholar was of the party. They were a merry party, and had lain all night at Malwood Keep, a hunting lodge in the forest, where they had made good cheer, both at supper and breakfast, and had drunk a deal of wine. The party dispersed in various directions, as the custom of hunters then was. The king took with him only Sir Walter Tyrrell, who was a famous sportsman, and to whom he had given, before they mounted horse that morning, two fine arrows. The last time the king was ever seen alive, he was riding with Sir Walter Tyrrell, and their dogs were hunting together. It was almost night, when a poor charcoal burner, passing through the forest with his cart, came upon the solitary body of a dead man, shot with an arrow in the breast, and still bleeding. He got it into his cart. It was the body of the king, shaken and tumbled, with its red beard all whitened with lime and clotted with blood. It was driven in the cart by the charcoal burner next day to Winchester Cathedral, where it was received and buried. Sir Walter Tyrrell, who escaped to Normandy, and claimed the protection of the King of France, swore in France that the Red King was suddenly shot dead by an arrow from an unseen hand, while they were hunting together, that he was fearful of being suspected as the King a TMS murderer, and that he instantly set spurs to his horse, and fled to the seashore. Others declared that the King and Sir Walter Tyrrell were hunting in company, a little before sunset, standing in bushes opposite one another, when a stag came between them. That the King drew his bow and took aim, but the string broke. That the King then cried, "Eh, shoot, Walter, in the devil a TMS name! ATM that Sir Walter shot." That the arrow glanced against a tree, was turned aside from the stag, and struck the king from his horse, dead. By whose hand the Red King really fell, and whether that hand dispatched the arrow to his breast by accident or by design, is only known to God. Some think his brother may have caused him to be killed, but the Red King had made so many enemies, both among priests and people, that suspicion may reasonably rest upon a less unnatural murderer. Men know no more than that he was found dead in the New Forest, which the suffering people had regarded as a doomed ground for his race. Chapter 6. England under Henry I, called Fine Scholar, on hearing of the Red King of TMS death, hurried to Winchester with as much speed as Rufus himself had made, to seize the royal treasure. But the keeper of the treasure, who had been one of the hunting party in the forest, made haste to Winchester too, and, arriving there at about the same time, refused to yield it up. Upon this, Fine Scholar drew his sword, and threatened to kill the treasurer, who might have paid for his fidelity with his life, but that he knew longer resistance to be useless when he found the prince supported by a company of powerful barons, who declared they were determined to make him king. The treasurer, therefore, gave up the money and jewels of the crown, and on the third day after the death of the Red King, being a Sunday, Fine Scholar stood before the high altar in Westminster Abbey, and made a solemn declaration that he would resign the church property which his brother had seized, that he would do no wrong to the nobles, and that he would restore to the people the laws of Edward the Confessor, with all the improvements of William the Conqueror. So began the reign of King Henry I. The people were attached to their new king, both because he had known distresses, and because he was an Englishman by birth and not a Norman. To strengthen this last hold upon them, the king wished to marry an English lady, and could think of no other wife than Maud the Good, the daughter of the King of Scotland. Although this good princess did not love the king, she was so affected by the representations the nobles made to her of the great charity it would be in her to unite the Norman and Saxon races, and prevent hatred and bloodshed between them for the future, that she consented to become his wife. After some disputing among the priests, who said that as she had been in a convent in her youth, and had worn the veil of a nun, she could not lawfully be married, against which the princess stated that her aunt, with whom she had lived in her youth, had indeed sometimes thrown a piece of black stuff over her, but for no other reason than because the nunnetiam's veil was the only dress the conquering Normans respected in girl or woman, and not because she had taken the vows of a nun, which she never had, as she was declared free to marry, and was made King Henrietta's queen. A good queen she was, beautiful, kind-hearted, and worthy of a better husband than the king. For he was a cunning and unscrupulous man, though firm and clever. He cared very little for his word, and took any means to gain his ends. All this is shown in his treatment of his brother Roberto Robert, who had suffered him to be refreshed with water, and who had sent him the wine from his own table, when he was shut up, with the crows flying below him, parched with thirst, in the castle on the top of St. Michaelitiam's Mount, where his red brother would have let him die. Before the king began to deal with Robert, he removed and disgraced all the favourites of the late king, who were for the most part base characters, much detested by the people. Flambard, or Firebrand, whom the late king had made Bishop of Durham, of all things in the world, Henry imprisoned in the Tower, but Firebrand was a great joker and a jolly companion, and made himself so popular with his guards that they pretended to know nothing about a long rope that was sent into his prison at the bottom of a deep flagon of wine. The guards took the wine, and Firebrand took the rope, with which, when they were fast asleep, he let himself down from a window in the night, and so got cleverly aboard ship and away to Normandy. Now Robert, when his brother Fine Scholar came to the throne, was still absent in the Holy Land. Henry pretended that Robert had been made sovereign of that country, and he had been away so long, that the ignorant people believed it. But, behold, when Henry had been some time King of England, Robert came home to Normandy, having leisurely returned from Jerusalem through Italy, in which beautiful country he had enjoyed himself very much, and had married a lady as beautiful as itself. In Normandy, he found Firebrand waiting to urge him to assert his claim to the English crown, and declare war against King Henry. This, after great loss of time in feasting and dancing with his beautiful Italian wife among his Norman friends, he at last did. The English in general were on King Henrietta's side, though many of the Normans were on Robertetiam's. But the English sailors deserted the king, and took a great part of the English fleet over to Normandy, so that Robert came to invade this country in no foreign vessels, but in English ships. The virtuous Anselm, however, whom Henry had invited back from abroad, and made Archbishop of Canterbury, was steadfast in the King at TMS cause, and it was so well supported that the two armies, instead of fighting, made a peace. Poor Robert, who trusted anybody and everybody, readily trusted his brother, the king, and agreed to go home and receive a pension from England, on condition that all his followers were fully pardoned. This the king very faithfully promised, but Robert was no sooner gone than he began to punish them. Among them was the Earl of Shrewsbury, who, on being summoned by the king to answer to 45 accusations, rode away to one of his strong castles, shut himself up therein, called around him his tenants and vassals, and fought for his liberty, but was defeated and banished.